Today on the podcast, a mantelpiece moment that took me to a wood that is rumoured to have inspired Tolkien, a novel that introduces us to one of the richest fantasy worlds in existence, and of course, the weekly reveal to what wonderful book I have pulled down from my to-be-read shelf. All of that and more this week on A Novel Review. Hello and welcome to the literature podcast, A Novel Review. My name is Seamus, your host, and together we will discuss, dissect, and explore the wonderful world of literature. And the wonderful world of literature is a vast and dense jungle. So let's start making our way through, one book at a time. Hey guys, welcome back. Another day, another episode, same host. I am Seamus. And for today's episode, we're going to be discussing The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien. But before we get into that book, we always take a moment to reflect on any mantelpiece moments, something to highlight from the week past. And this moment doesn't actually come from the week past. It comes from, it's sad to say, last year. I was on a road trip in England and I went to kind of specifically to a place in Dartmoor National Park. I was heading towards a place called Wistman's Wood, which is this place that is rumoured to have inspired Tolkien. He apparently had a holiday house quite nearby and would often walk up to this wood, and it is, I mean, the walk there, first of all, is stunning. It's, I mean, Dartmoor National Park, the moors of Dartmoor are just these windswept, it's such an austere landscape. It's really windswept. There's nothing going on. It looks almost completely barren. There's barely any trees in sight, which is really interesting because you can't see any trees. And then all of a sudden there's just this wood in this particular section that I was, and it's this incredibly dense. In fact, if my editing skills are anything, I'll try to get a picture right about there. I think we can do a bit better. We can go 1, 2, 3. How's that? As you can now see, it is just such a gnarled forest, and the stones on the ground are just all covered in moss. All the tree branches intertwining and twisting amongst themselves are all covered in moss. And I mean, the canopy of the roof is just so thick that only some light can filter through, and what does get through just illuminates this beautiful moss against the black and brown tree trunks. It's such a wonderful sight. You can't actually walk through the forest itself because they want to protect it, and I mean, you'd quite literally have to crawl over branches and rocks and everything like that. It'd probably be quite dangerous and slippery. You know, I don't know if Tolkien actually wandered through. I'm sure he probably did once or twice, maybe the cheeky boy, but it's such a cool forest, and you can definitely see how, if he did actually make his way to this spot, that he would have been inspired. You know, Fangorn Forest, the Old Forest, Mirkwood, I don't know, one of them, any of them, they're all fantastic. And yeah, so let's come back to me now. And it's just, yeah, it's just an austere landscape. Like, it's really barren, it's really quiet. There's barely any cars, there's barely any people, and it looks like there's barely any life. In fact, I'm, you know, if my editing skills are anything, there we go. That's just a view of what the moors look like. And it's so, I mean, you can see from this picture, you can't see anything on these rolling plains. And then all of a sudden, you're just, come back to me now, you're all of a sudden just in this incredibly dense forest, and you just wonder how, you know, you could go from pretty much nothing to all of a sudden in just such a rich, dense forest. And it's a fantastic experience. I'd recommend it to anyone if you're ever in the area. Dartmoor National Park as a whole, but Wistman's Wood as well. So yeah, check it out. Bit of housekeeping. If you would like to like and subscribe, that would be great. But this is not a cult. Don't feel the need. You can just listen. I'm not going to hold you to it. This is a, you know, it's a free podcast. Enjoy it. Don't feel the need to subscribe to me, because that's not what we're about here. We're about having a good time. So yeah, like and subscribe. I appreciate it, but don't feel the need. In a hole in the ground, there lived a hobbit. Not a nasty, dirty, wet hole filled with the ends of worms and an oozy smell, nor yet a dry, bare, sandy hole with nothing in it to sit down on or to eat. It was a hobbit hole. And that means comfort. And with those words, we begin our journey into the most comforting of children's stories, the most comforting of fantasy stories, perhaps in the richest fantasy world ever created. The Hobbit was our first glimpse into the imagination of John Ronald Reuel Tolkien, and our first moment to experience this world of Middle-earth and the larger legendarium. It was the first time we learnt of hobbits in their holes of comfort and good cheer, enjoying one of the many meals, whether that be breakfast, second breakfast, elevensies, lunch, afternoon tea, dinner, supper. Immediately, the ideals of The Hobbit were loved, a children's story beloved by all, myself included. Now, before I delve into the book, I just wanted to touch upon the painting I did for this week, which, if you're on YouTube, is always the very short intermission picture. Otherwise, you can see it on Instagram, Twitter, not Twitter, X, as it's now known, other social medias, etc., etc. I painted a Hobbit door opening, and filling the space is an acorn. Now, famously, the acorn does not actually appear in the book. It actually appears in the films, but I just wanted to paint the acorn because, you know, it's this thing that Bilbo picks up in the films, and he when Thorin confronts him about it, he's like, why have you picked up this acorn, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, I want to take it home and plant it in my garden. And I really love that idea that hobbits, especially Bilbo, in just these few lines, you know, Bilbo is on a dangerous journey. He's trying to secure dwarf gold from under a mountain guarded by a dragon. But he's still thinking of home, and he's thinking about what actually brings him love and what he truly values. And, I, you know, just having a nice tree in the garden is something that he really values. You know, he's got all the wealth potentially ahead of him if he manages to get this dragon out of the way, which... you know, easier said than done, but it's still, he looks and sees an acorn and thinks, yes, there's something there I want. So it's, you know, just sort of a perfect time to insert that quote from Tolkien himself, all that is gold does not glitter. So yeah, that's my justification for painting it. I thought that was one of the areas the films really excelled in, just that one simple scene. So don't come for me. Now let's get on with the show. An overview, perhaps, even though I just kind of did one, but that's okay. The Hobbit is about the Hobbit Bilbo Baggins. If you don't know what a hobbit is, I am worried that there might be no hope for you, but they are known as a race of little people, generally standing around 3 feet high. Well, hobbits are lovers of creature comforts. They love food, as I've already said, many meals a day. They love relaxing, they love being cozy, smoking, and just generally existing. They're the definition of just like this chiller race of individuals. So anyway, Bilbo is just kind of chilling at home when a wizard Gandalf shows up and basically kind of forcefully makes Bilbo go on this adventure, joining a team of dwarves who are, yeah, they're on this mission to regain their homeland and all the riches that go with it, as it was stolen from them by the great fire drake of the north, Smaug the dragon. That is basically an overview, incredibly brief, quite literally a rags to riches story, the true underdogs of Middle Earth. So one of the opening scenes to the story is so crucial to understanding Tolkien's love of language and the elastic nature of it. This is the passage that I want to read out between Bilbo and Gandalf, and you can probably see the elastic nature of what he's trying to get at here. And it goes, "Good morning," said Bilbo, and he meant it. The sun was shining and the grass was very green. But Gandalf looked at him from under long bushy eyebrows that stuck out further than the brim of his shady hat. "What do you mean?" he said. "Do you wish me a good morning, or mean that it is a good morning whether I want it or not? Or that you feel good this morning, or that it is a morning to be good on?" It's this incredibly wonderful passage, and it just sort of captures the writing style of Tolkien that's so embellished and so dense, and yet still captures that fleeting beauty of poetry, that elastic nature of poetry. It's just something to be truly admired, because, you know, he can paint a picture of a landscape with you so rich and so vibrant, and yet with just a few swift lines, he can slice some of the darkest moments. And this was often intentional. This pertains perhaps a bit more to Lord of the Rings than The Hobbit itself, but Tolkien said he didn't particularly like to write war scenes and battle scenes, which is why they are so often brief in the books, but also because these aren't stories about wars and fighting and battles of that kind. He didn't want to glorify such moments in the way that the films do, which, I mean, come on, the films are pretty epic, so we're okay with that. But having served in World War I himself, fighting in the Battle of the Somme, it would be, you know, easy for him to classify this writing and everyone to classify this writing as allegory, but Tolkien himself, that this was actually a work of fairy and fairy stories, and fairy stories have its own way of revealing the truth. And I guess that begs the question, you know, what kind of truths can we actually pull from The Hobbit? You know, it's an incredibly open-ended question that could perhaps be better phrased as, you know, if we want to go sort of high school level, what did you get from this book? What did you take from it? What did you learn from it? What are the lessons you took, you know? What would you expect? I mean, it's a children's book, so what lessons do you expect it to influence on a child? I guess it's kind of like a supremely intimate question, and yet there is a part that also hopes that there's a universality to it, I guess, in that the fundamental beliefs and lessons from this book, you know, do bleed through to each individual. So, I mean, I'm going to reveal what I took from it, and hopefully most people agree. So, what did I actually take from this book, The Hobbit? I mean, there's so much to take from it. There's perhaps the universal truth that even the smallest person can influence the world, which I don't think that's a surprise to anyone. That's kind of the one of the main morals of the story and that of Lord of the Rings as well. But I guess there are some other ones as well. One that I really liked and really stuck out was no matter how small you are, stand up for what you believe. And I think this is actually really wonderfully developed through the story, and I think better portrayed in this book than in the films. It's how Bilbo actually develops as a character who, even though he's often out of his depth, he's physically smaller than the dwarves, but everyone else that he comes in contact with, he's often ill-equipped to deal with a lot of situations, but he sort of still has the courage to speak up when he believes something. And for parts of this book, he's actually the leader of the company, not just the focal character that we are reading about. It's a really lovely aspect of this book, watching him develop into this leader type character, but also important to note that he does grow to the point that he is no longer recognizable to his former self. It is a pretty traditional heroic arc that Bilbo undergoes, facing small trials and tribulations along the way, of course, each one building up his character more and more. And I mean, this growth is just a testament to Tolkien's writing style, because I felt there wasn't a moment in this book when you're like, yep, there we go. Bilbo has taken a turn now. He's the hero. He's gone from this like homely little hobbit, the main character of this story. He's kind of quiet, he's a bit stubborn, but he just so subtly and gradually over time, over the course of the text, you sort of get to the end and you know where Bilbo began and then you know where he ends. And the middle is just so gradual and so natural that it's this really lovely story, but also, yeah, a huge testament to Tolkien's writing style. The story, of course, captures not just the importance and beauty of friendships, but also the need of them. This is a band of, people sort of thrust together. There's a couple of dwarves, more than a couple of dwarves. There's a hobbit, some elves, some eagles along the way. There's a wizard, not to mention Beorn, the skin changer. And always in the story, you're sort of forced to be reminded that this is an unlikely bunch of people thrust together, and along the way they are always meeting different people, but with, a bit of respect, some kindness, and a little bit of good humor, many relationships are fostered. The dragon Smaug plays an integral role in this novel. Dragons hoard gold for no real reason other than they want gold. Power for power's sake, greed for greed's sake. And I think that resonates a lot with people, especially at the moment when some people just seem to be able to amass, such wealth, and it's incomprehensible. But also, they also don't want to part with it. They don't want to quote, to paraphrase Smaug, because I can't remember the exact quote. I will not part with a single coin of it. Despite this insane greed, Smaug is actually a really interesting character. He's really intelligent and really well spoken, which might sound odd because we're talking about a dragon, but he is. And Bilbo, when he comes across Smaug, therefore tries to get on his level and be intelligent in answering questions in a roundabout way. And it's this absolutely brilliant dialogue that goes back and forth between the two. This is actually a really great scene because it's one that Bilbo actually fails in. It's a similar kind of dialogue to which Bilbo has had earlier with Gollum, in that it's kind of playful with this edge of sinister lurking in the background. The difference is, Smaug is a bit more intelligent, and so Bilbo, in his attempts to be concealing who he is and why he's there, actually reveals other things and ruins almost everything. I think it's an important scene because the whole time we've been watching Bilbo grow and develop, I guess, it is nice to see a story that it's not real life, so no one's actually dying, but it is nice to see a couple failures along the way because that's how people grow. Because, bad things can still happen. And those things will have consequences. And I mean, it's just sort of serves to remind you. And hopefully, of course, when we, ourselves in the real world make these little mistakes, it doesn't cost the lives of many people, the many lives of the people of Lake Town. But I mean, we never know. What are the issues with The Hobbit? Are there any issues with The Hobbit? Easy. No, there are no issues. I think the only issue people think there is because, I've seen this a lot more since the films came out, is that people expect too much from it. It's a children's book and it explores some pretty adult themes, but it's still fundamentally a children's book. It's meant to be easy, it's meant to be accessible, it's meant to be simple, if such a word can exist in the same vein as Tolkien. I think people often lose sight of the fact because Lord of the Rings does exist, and I mean that shouldn't take anything away from this story, The Hobbit. I think I love this story because it's charming, it's simple, and it's a great little adventure quest. It's great for childish fun, but, and this is a good but, if you want more, if you want to seize more, it is there. the whole passage about, you know, what are the meanings behind what we say, good morning? What do we actually mean by that? I mean, you can laugh at the wit of it, but you can also consider what we do mean when we say these things. Okay, let's take a moment to chat about Gollum. In my opinion, the most important character in The Lord of the Rings, making his first appearance in the book The Hobbit. One of the greatest moments of foreshadowing, I think, in my humble opinion, begins in The Hobbit and carries right through to the ending of The Lord of the Rings. So let me read a quote for you. It's just after Bilbo and Gollum have had their riddles in the dark, and Bilbo is now wearing the ring. He's invisible and he's trying to escape, and Gollum's in the way. And this is the quote. He must fight. He must stab the foul thing, put its eyes out, kill it. It meant to kill him. No, not a fair fight. He was invisible now. Gollum had no sword. Gollum had not actually threatened to kill him or tried to yet. And he was miserable, alone, lost. A sudden understanding, a pity mixed with horror welled up in Bilbo's heart. A glimpse of endless, unmarked days without light or hope of betterment. Hard stone, cold fish, sneaking and whispering. All these thoughts passed in the flash of a second. He trembled, and then quite suddenly in another flash, as if lifted by a new strength and resolve, he leaped. And then from there, Bilbo escapes, leaving Gollum behind, and it's the pity of this moment that comes back in the Fellowship of the Ring when Gandalf says, "The pity of Bilbo may rule the fate of many." And then later in the story of The Lord of the Rings, spoilers for anyone who doesn't know, you know, how Lord of the Rings ends, but the ring is destroyed because of Gollum. There is no redemption. This is relating directly to the books here, not the films, because there is no redemption for Frodo in the books like there is in the films. He claims the ring. Frodo claims the ring for himself, succumbing to its power. And so in that moment, the ring will live on and the quest has actually failed. But then Gollum appears and bites the ring wearing finger off, getting the ring and the finger as well. And in that moment of separation in the films, Frodo sort of comes to this moment of sense and clarity and pushes Gollum into the lava along with the ring, thus concluding the quest. In the books, however, it's slightly different in that the same thing happens. Gollum bites the finger, gets the ring, blah, blah, blah. And then when he obtains the ring, he's looking at it and actually trips backwards and falls into the lava of his own accord. So if Bilbo had killed Gollum all those years ago when he was defenseless, the future would be, as I have already said in this quote, a glimmer of endless unmarked days without light or hope of betterment, hard stone, cold fish, sneaking and whispering. Instead, Bilbo had the courage to not take a life, even though he could have, and what's more important, without any personal consequence. It's often what people do when they are alone, and that's when they show their true self. So in that moment, literally invisible, we see the true strength of Bilbo Baggins of the Shire. A true hobbit, noble and kind and wise and charming. He's a wonderful character, and I mean, he's one that I would always love and have a pleasure to spend time with. So here we are, a rating. How could I rate a book like this? I mean, what would I rate a book like this? It's so embedded in the culture. It kickstarts the richest fantasy experience of, you know, it kickstarts modern fantasy. So it was and always will be a perfect 5. So what am I reading this week? This week I am reading Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, and yeah, second book in the series, and my god, what a nostalgic trip it is to reread these books. It's actually a lot of fun. It reminds me so much of my childhood. It was, you know, it really makes you appreciate having these books to grow up with. You know, they're probably one of the main reasons so many of us love to read and love these adventure fantasy stories. I am absolutely loving it. I started it yesterday. I'm smashing through it. I hate to say it, although I love to say it actually, this is much better than Philosopher's Stone. It is so much stronger than Philosopher's Stone. That's taking nothing away from Philosophers, of course, because I know that's the foundational story. I said that in the episode on that it is, you know, the foundational story, and you've got to give it sort of the time to do the world building and build up these characters and stuff. But once you've gotten through that sort of initial fog and you're into the story, it is just such a pleasure to be reading these stories now. And yeah, I'm absolutely loving it. I mean, the introduction of Dobby is hilarious. I'm having a good time, guys. It's all good times over here. Now, before I close out the show, if you have listened this far, please consider hitting those 5 stars. I would really appreciate it, but remember, this is not a cult. But also feel free to head along to the website and support the pod. But as always, thank you for your attention. So I think it's time to end this episode, and today to take us away, I think a final piece of The Hobbit from Tolkien, because he's my favourite author, so why not? And the quote goes, "So comes snow after fire, and even dragons have their endings."